Welcome to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. My name is Fergal Byrne. Join me as I speak to senior business leaders building sustainable value chains across a wide range of industries. We explore key questions related to the drive to sustainability, from procurement to the role of technology and innovation, regulatory pressures and labor standards, transparency and risk management. We explore what is working, the latest thinking, and identify key lessons and insights. So thank you very much, Richard, and welcome to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis.
Thank you, Fergal.
Now, before we start, Richard, can you give us a brief overview of Venator and your role within the company?
If we're looking at Venator, we are essentially a leading global chemical company with a focused development on the manufacturing of titanium dioxide pigments and something that we tend to call performance additives. Titanium dioxide pigments essentially is the white pigment that is produced. So anything that is white essentially has our product in it, so to speak. When you're talking about performance additives, you're referring to things that are within the pigments and coatings industry, used chemicals for making sure that the performance of the final product becomes better than its original. But again, within white pigments and also within the area of coatings where a lot of the pigments usage happens to take place. In terms of my role, it's basically a global procurement director. As such, I'm leading a team of 29 colleagues that are globally required to purchase anything the company needs to run its businesses and its manufacturing sites. So you can think of anything that goes from a chair to sit behind a desk towards raw materials, chemicals, natural gas, power, electricity for operating our manufacturing sites.
Very interesting role, Richard. And what initially motivated Venator to engage with EcoVadis on its sustainable procurement journey?
It kind of started around about 2018, 2019, when increasingly our customers, and you got to think of our customers as parties that are, let's say, closer to the end consumer, i.e. you and I, that are regularly buying paint, maybe a car where a lot of coating and paint is used, and starting to kind of probe and talk and question regarding sustainable performance and how green is a product. And those questions from the providers of coatings and paints were starting to kind of come to us and say, well, hey, we need to provide answers. And we're obviously now talking to our suppliers. We kind of want to know what it is that you guys are doing. A number of them were very much geared up towards EcoVadis and the fact that EcoVadis was applying a sustainability assessment and referring to that as the standard and the reference that they kind of considered to be, for them, relatively important and telling everything that could be told about an assessment like that as a company. They were asking questions like, what is your sustainability performance? And they were starting to reference that the EcoVadis sustainability assessment for them was a kind of like, you know, 360-degree assessment of basically the environmental, social, and governance agenda that is out there. And basically said, you know, for us, that is kind of the standard. So that kind of started triggering Venator to say, okay, so we're starting to get these questions. And EcoVadis as a standard and a reference gets mentioned frequently. So the result of that was that in 2019, we kind of took out that EcoVadis sustainability assessment because we essentially ourselves wanted to know, like, hey, how does it work? What does it mean? And what does it tell us? And we can then at least share that information with our customers.
Now, for many companies, the first EcoVadis assessment can have quite a big impact. How was it for Venator? And I'm just wondering, how did this experience and the information you got, how did this shape your team's understanding of sustainability? What kind of changes did you make as a result?
Yeah, the 2019 assessment for Venator at that moment in time scored a bronze medal. And basically, you've got anything in color from bronze to basically the best in class performance you can achieve. And below that, you've got something like you get a notation, but you've basically got no score. So it wasn't too bad for us in that sense. We didn't necessarily think too much of it at that time because it basically was like, you know, we've got the assessment done, the report is there, customers, please view it. But obviously they started probing and questioning. And that's when the challenge became more vocal towards us. And that allowed us to kind of say, well, hey, let's do slightly deeper analyses and investigate what that insight of the assessment is all about, because it does offer a lot of information, to be honest. And the challenging customers kind of said, you know, when is your next assessment? What are you going to be doing? And it basically meant in 2021, we were back. And at that moment in time, we got ourselves a silver medal. So we were up a notch and we were an improvement, basically a company that was on the improvement ladder. And that one really became the real eye-opener, because then it was like, okay, we are on the list up. What is it that we're missing? Because the feedback report is very strong. It gives very useful tips and guides you in terms of strong points, but of more importantly, I would say your shortfalls. And that really allowed us to learn from it, obtain training from EcoVadis and insights on like, what do you mean? What is this all about? How do you go about this? What are best practices out there? And that's how we started creating what I would call internal subject matter experts on the assessment and the results. That really started to change things around for us. That's when we started like, okay, kind of internal champions, taking things forward, translating things and saying, you know, this is what it's all about. So that kind of, yeah, if you then start talking about changes, real changes became like focus. And EcoVadis capabilities, helping you to train, develop your staff. My own team, over the past 16 months, we've gone through 4 training sessions where I, as a leader, stepped up and kind of casted a shadow of showing what is it all about, why is it important, and EcoVadis being there as a subject matter expert, really giving color and detail to everything else. And as a result, yeah, what does it make as a result? It's basically our significant improvements in score and the journey upwards in terms of we know where we're now heading, how we need to get there, and how to use particularly EcoVadis as somebody that holds your hand at the moment you need it to develop your own DNA and organizational maturity that is so required to get onto that sustainability journey.
Very interesting. And would you say at that stage that you were developing a sustainable procurement initiative?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. There was no doubt about it. That's by that time, 21, 22, when we were kind of getting hooked onto the annual EcoVadis assessment cycle, it basically did help us to say, yeah, you know, this is the journey we're on. By that time, we really had leadership support coming up significantly. So the scorecard from EcoVadis was all that you were looking for in terms of intelligence that is kind of out there. Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, we come back to the leadership question maybe in a little bit, Richard. Can you walk us through and talk a little bit about how the EcoVadis scorecard is integrated into your supplier relationship management? I'm just wondering in what ways does your procurement team use it to evaluate, to enhance supplier sustainability practices?
Yeah, you get a lot of richness from it. Let's put it like this. You know, the assessment we go through, that's the same standard that our suppliers go through that we consider critical suppliers. So it provides an enormous amount of supplier intelligence regarding all of the purchased goods and services that you're bringing in. And next to that, you, of course, outside of what I would call the environmental, social, and governance type of aspects, you want to also hear the details from things like carbon footprint. So all of that is kind of, yeah, newly introduced intelligence next to the new kid on the block that is emerging at the moment throughout Europe with legislation. And we could call that supply chain risk management. All of these topics are kind of like what I would call the new part of vendor management dictating the agenda next to, let's call it the usual discussion on prices, terms, conditions, liabilities, risk, the kind of usual agenda of a relationship you would be considering the normal dialogue. So increasingly, we must now focus on things like vendor segmentation, which ones are the important ones where we have the real deep discussion, which are the second tier type of suppliers where you still have a intelligent discussion, but less deep and those kind of things, because you got to make all of that work still manageable. Right? It's you're trying to do everything with the same crew. You got to become smart about these things and more focused in terms of segmentation, right questions asked, data management, records keeping. So all of these things start to become more integrated into an efficient, effective organization. I would say currently, we allow vendors to kind of get used to that whole sustainability journey, because it took us from kind of 2019 to 2021 to really embrace this ourselves. So kind of like, you know, journey for 3 years. And that wasn't necessarily a steep or fast journey. We were kind of trotting along nicely and gently until we felt that things were really starting to turn around in our business. And basically our suppliers are going through that same experience. So we got to accept that whole sustainable procurement initiative for them is going to take a few years as well to become increasingly more understanding of it and appreciate that we are going to be more outspoken in our demands and specifications. So in the process, it's all about dialogue, getting them ready, training them, guiding them, and also taking them along by the hands and taking that journey forward with us jointly as well as for themselves. And that's an interesting one as well.
Thank you, Richard. Now, you mentioned the leadership just a moment ago, and I'm just wondering, how would you characterize the role of Venator's leadership in driving and supporting your sustainable procurement journey? In what ways would you say their support has shaped your approach to sustainable procurement?
Yeah, I think it starts from what I said early on, when you started having those customer dialogues, which very often, of course, comes from your sales department. And I think they brought the message back home that increasingly, you could argue, the license to sell or the license to do business was changing from, let's call it managing your manufacturing site in a safe, environmentally health and sustainable method within the permit to operate. And all of a sudden, the license to operate has now become increasingly also how your customers review your performance and whether or not you are providing a unique selling point vis-a-vis competitors in terms of your sustainability performance. And I think the leadership from the top was very quickly present in that aspect, particularly because one of the board members at that stage actually was also the CEO of a chemical company that I would argue was probably about 3 to 5 years ahead of where Venator is today. So the lady in question that was the board member and CEO of this company kind of really started radiating within the executive team and the board team that this was a journey to be stepped up and really get onto. And therefore, very quickly, our executives assigned leadership to it and started expressing deep motivation for this journey to kick off and get on with it. So between 2019, that first assessment, and 2021, that activity within the high-level leadership started to take off. And immediately, Venator set up a multidisciplinary sustainability council where all of the non-executive, so basically director, influential leaders were starting to come together and basically covering all disciplines within the company. So that sustainability council kind of being a mix from executives and then kind of like the multidisciplinary directors in the disciplines started to kind of support the EcoVadis relationship through their early product, which is the rating platform subscription. And that one got us into like this, you get hooked to that kind of yearly annual sustainability assessment to be able to measure and see your annual progress and thereby report towards your customer base what is happening. And today we have a customer base over 100 customers that are looking at the EcoVadis database for our information. And then, like in 2019, you know, it was like maybe 10 or 5. So the journey there shows again how the industry is starting to shape differently. And from that ratings platform subscription, it cascaded on. And we started to get into the sustainable supplier platform subscription and received support from the leadership to do that as well. And basically this year, we've extended it even further with the IQ Plus Vital subscription from EcoVadis. Because it is such a logic journey which when you explain that to the leadership and you build a business case and you bring it forward, they see the logic fit of that slate of products coming across, particularly also because of the continuous changing landscape, as I said earlier, around things like supply chain risk management. So in that sense, I think leadership role and support has been pretty vital and very strong and committed.
What was it, do you think, that convinced them to deepening this relationship, Richard?
I think, first of all, the criticality of the customer base starting to probe and ask questions. So unless you are able to continue to compete and have your, let's say, business license to operate, you better start waking up and say that your customer base is evolving. Are you going to evolve with it, or are you going to just ignore it altogether? Now, that is in itself still a slightly soft argument, because it doesn't necessarily say that if a customer gets a price offered for titanium dioxide purchase X, and it gets it from us, and it's Y, and Y would be higher than X because of the sustainability cost that we need to pass on, we might be losing business. So there's this subtleness around, we like you, we'd like to do business with you, but you know, we're not going to pay a dime more for it than the product that we buy from somebody that's not doing anything about it. So that market issue is still out there. And we've had a lot of competition from Chinese imports over the past several years. And the Chinese are not where we are at that stage. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily pay off yet. But at the same time, of course, it does offer the opportunity that if you don't do anything today, then maybe in 2-3 years from now, you might be too late anyway. So, you got to do something. You got to start with programs and initiatives. You might want to take a slow pace and not be too fast and kind of not invest too much, but reasonable to keep going. But it was, I think, from the early days on that I said earlier, you know, that we had a board member and being the CEO of a company who basically very vividly was able to explain the business case from that company. Now, it might be because that company was, of course, in a somewhat different end market and users market, where maybe the susceptibility of that customer's base was stronger towards committing to a sustainability conscious supplier. Our market is progressing slightly slower in that one, but there's going to be a moment where it's going to turn around. Because let's remember that at the end products that our customers make are going into the likes of the BMWs, the Mercedes-Benzes, coatings of products that are in the DIY market used for painting houses and those kind of things. At some point in time, we as customers are going to be increasingly becoming more sustainability oriented. Again, I know we all don't want to pay more for it, you know, but the questions will be coming as we evolve further and further, let's be honest. So you can't be too late on this one either. You got to jump on the bandwagon early enough as well. And the regulatory side at this moment in time, of course, translates itself much in supply chain risk management. But that one is covering all of these topics as well. So let's not ignore it. If you are going to be a successful entrepreneur in the future, you got to wake up to this one. Absolutely.
That's very helpful. Thank you, Richard. Now, can we talk about supplier selection? And can you tell us, Richard, about the approach you developed for evaluating and selecting suppliers?
Yeah, no, it is. It's been definitely a journey of development in the past 2-3 years. Because let's be honest, we're dealing with a group of roughly about 4,500 vendors globally. You can't manage them all, period. That's virtually impossible. So you got to go through clearly supplier selection. You got to really focus on like what matters, what really is important. And very quickly, when you start going through an analysis, you identify that, all right, about 150 of your vendors basically make up 80% of your spend. And when we looked at carbon footprinting, the scope 3 carbon footprinting, it identified to us that the analysis was 80 of our vendors basically determine almost all of our scope 3 carbon footprint. So all of a sudden, your supplier selection criteria are very quickly defined. Because it basically says that roughly about 150 vendors in spend and about 80 vendors in carbon footprint kind of make up basically 80 to 90% of the scope of focus that you want to have when you are into sustainability. So that very quickly helped us in terms of supplier selection frameworking. That doesn't mean you're going to forget all of the other 4,500 minus 200 vendors. No, you're not. But you need other ways and other tools to manage that and focus. So a clear focus for the past 1 to 2 years has definitely been on that group of, call it 200 vendors at this moment in time. That's why you want to get your hands around them. You want to bring them on board. You really want to know everything that you need to know about them in a proper manner, because that is the critical mass to success going forward. And success going forward means we've got a long-term plan by 2030 where we want to be. That's that group that's going to make the difference. So that was very helpful. And we got to thank EcoVadis for helping that process, because I've reached out regularly to them and said, guys, this is my next question. As I'm maturing, I now need to do this, that, and the other stuff. So vendor segmentation becomes important. And they very much help you out by saying, you know what, we actually have got one or two best practices here, there, and there. We can share them with you. Take a look at it and see what makes sense for you guys. And that really has been very helpful. They really bring that knowledge and really kind of treated us with that respect and saying, that's how you go forward. Next question then was, of course, in terms of that developing a steering committee, was like, well, you've done the segmentation, you've got the data coming in, let's call it the non-commercial specifications are now defined. So on these softer criteria, how are you going to be looking at your vendors that are non-performing? What are you going to be doing about them? And that's when we brought in the concept of what we call a supplier sustainability committee, with whom we're basically going to sit around the table and say, you know, do you approve the segmentation? Do you really think that our specifications are too tight or should be loosened? What do you think about the fact that we've got suppliers that are non-committing to this and don't want to know about this and are basically kind of turning their back against us? But knowing that some of these suppliers are so critical to us because they are single source suppliers. So we need to put in place exemption approval processes so that we then deal with that vendor in a slightly different way. And we felt that some of this was kind of becoming so business critical that we could be very ambitious as a purchasing department and just do our own thing. But at the end of the day, of course, everything goes back to the bottom line. And you basically want to bring in the executives from both the commercial side as well as the sustainability side and say, hey, we regularly believe that around supplier selection, frameworking, but also triggering issues that we need to deal with, we should have a dialogue with you guys and basically have something like an escalation process in place whereby we bring you in for critical decision making. And that's been an evolution that took place. And it felt very logic in the maturity steps that we're taking towards managing our suppliers now that we start getting all of that intelligent data coming towards us.
You mentioned these 4,000 other vendors. Does the EcoVadis platform help manage dealing with that? That's quite a large group.
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that we've started to increasingly embrace a number of EcoVadis subscriptions that are on offer. And actually, it was a decision this year made for that particular group to take on the IQ Plus Vitals subscription. It covers two things. First of all, the heavy-handed, sustainable assessment, high-level EcoVadis capability of tool that is out there is for many small-time vendors, small, medium enterprises, a pretty heavy pill to swallow. So they, I think, also recognized that and said, you know, we could actually, through IQ Plus Vitals, go for a light touch version that would be much more palatable for small, medium enterprises. That's one area. So that's the kind of answer whereby you say, you know, that big bazooka, you shouldn't be shooting that at those kind of vendors. And that's a vendor pool that fits more into that area of the other 4,000. So great tool. Works much better. Secondly, IQ Plus Vitals is providing the capability to do supply chain risk management analyses. And of course, that is the new European legislation that's coming in pretty fast at this moment in time. And it's being rolled out as we speak. And it basically provides, again, that capability and tool to say through a light touch version, it not only provides the input from the supplier that is provided, which is one angle, but you know, the supplier can always color their answers and those kind of things. So you got to be slightly careful there what you get. IQ Plus Vitals actually also does the other part. It does the kind of 360-degree analysis of public knowledge, public information, what is out there in newspapers, on the internet, and what is it that I can get hold of that says something about the company on all kinds of things that are in the news available. And you then start getting almost kind of like two different pillars of information that give you a kind of a almost a 360-degree feedback loop saying, you know, this is what we know about that company. And this is the information that is telling and might give you a dashboard that is not as rich as the full-fledged sustainability assessment. But boy, it's still very rich. And it still does provide you the opportunities to get answers on supply chain risk management and getting sustainability vendor information that really is worthwhile as well. So I think the answer is there. The tool is there. Let's be honest. You got to work through portals and tools like that if you want to really manage a large-scale vendor pool. And I'm not saying we're going to manage all 4,000 in Veneto, let's be totally clear, but segmentation will help us now to start identifying that group as our next step in the journey for sustainable procurement.
Now, I'm just wondering, who's on the steering committee, Sustainability Council? I think you hinted a little bit at the mix of sustainability and commercial agendas within that group. Maybe talk a little bit about the thinking that went behind it and how you made it happen.
Yeah. The first process step that came forward was like, okay, you've got all the data, you've got this information. How, as you progress over the years, are you going to be assessing vendors with whom you want to continue to do business and what should be their score performance in the future versus which vendors that are not performing and over a number of years through assessments are not improving at all? What are you going to do about them? You got to start making decisions at some point in time. You can keep on doing handholding for a few years, but at some stage, you got to say, you know, we call it a day. You're clearly not committing. You're not going to be a supplier of the future with us, period. So we put together a strategy on that one and said, you know, these are the criteria. These are the moments where you basically call it a day with a vendor. And these are the criteria where you basically say, you know, that's a great vendor. We're going to put a vendor award recognition scheme to place. And those kind of things. So we created that evolutionary step ourselves, again, with the insights that EcoVadis could share about some of the best practices of companies that done this before, because you don't have to reinvent the wheel yourself. And then it emerged immediately like, yeah, but okay, you now got a, let's call it a critical vendor that is really pivotal to your performance of one of your sites, but they're not playing ball with you. What are you going to be doing about this? Well, hey, that's the dialogue we need to bring to the executive committee, because that would almost mean if you want to boot out that supplier, you would basically shut down the plant. Well, that can't happen. So now we've got an issue between our strategy, our choices, our culture and values, and a vendor that doesn't play ball with you. Well, that's why you bring the executives in. And then we said, you know, it should be the executives that are, of course, responsible for the sustainability performance and the culture and the levels of commitment at that end. And we've got the commercial executive in, basically the one that is P&L bottom line responsible, that need to bring together the dialogue between the two of them. Say, okay, there's the sustainability agenda. There's the commercial performance agenda. How do we marry those two and bring them together? And that's where it came from to say, okay, the committee really should start by having those two executives on board. So the CEO, the COO, and our sustainability executive vice president, myself as the lead from the global procurement department. And on an as-need basis, others are invited that are needed to entertain the dialogue when it comes to specific vendors. And that could be a site director, who's cited concerns, and those kind of things. So that's how we kind of put it together as a very small group. And we kind of quarterly come together, discuss progress, how we're evolving. Does it make sense that we've got 200 vendors in the pool of top tier one type of vendors? Or are we missing anything? Is it too big? And we have those KPIs and dialogues going on to say, what are we doing that governs that agenda for sustainable procurement in the right manner. Again, reward versus risk versus performance and what have you.
This has been a journey, as you say, over time, and has deepened your commitment to sustainability and within the organization in implementing these sustainability initiatives. What's been most difficult? What would you say some of the biggest lessons, Richard?
Yeah. Let's start off by at least saying, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, so take your time and plan. I think part of our success, if I look at that one, is very early on. When you've got, let's say, when you got that executive commitment out there, get together a multidisciplinary council to really develop a long-term plan. And long-term plan is, you know, we've got a plan till 2030 on a number of key criteria that we believe are achievable and want to reach, period. Very early on, the early adopters with some small successes definitely proved extremely helpful because they start radiating their own energy to that multidisciplinary council, start testing, challenging, probing, and pulling. And it allows for that healthy dialogue that needs to take place to ensure that everybody in that multidisciplinary council starts getting energized on this topic as well. Let's be totally honest. You then get that consideration, which of the assessment tools, capabilities, standards are you going to be working with? Now, like I said earlier, you know, we embraced EcoVadis big time. But I'll be honest with you, there are others out there in the market. So you got to find what works for you and really does fit with your business, your industry, and your culture, whatever you want to call it. Give it your proper considerations, because once you get in it, you are in it for the long haul. Once you really are, as we noticed with EcoVadis, you know, you're in it now, it's really well ingrained, and this easily can continue for a decade to come, if not longer. So make the right choice, I think, is very important as well, with what platform, what method of working you're really going to step up with. There are numbers of standards out there, and a good assessment really does wonders for you. What I can see, if I then drill in slightly more into like purchasing, or I would say, well, let's still keep it higher as well. Don't bring in what I would call a central sustainability subject matter expert, where you kind of say, you know, that's where we dump it. And he or she will lead the project and get on with it. You separate a total new identity department, single team, and they just need to get on with it. Because what you will not see happen, and I've seen that successful go ahead into purchasing, you don't get your total team engaged, involved, and properly trained. I really, from day one, didn't want anybody in my team that says, you know, I've got a central subject matter expert that reports to me, and that's the sustainability guru. None of it. Everybody does it. And if there is a guru, you know, it's me, period. Everybody in the team needs to develop the right DNA and really start to enjoy that there is a new additional scope of work that comes to you and that allows you to grow and develop. It's not just going to be single point terms and conditions, prices, payment terms, risk and liabilities. You're going to talk a broader vendor relationship dialogue with your suppliers, period. And my last point I would always want to make is do develop something like a dashboard and a document management retention system, because you're going to get such a lot of intelligence and data and details coming from the progress you're going to be making as you are on this journey. Think of supply code of conduct. Think of your scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions. Think of the annual sustainability assessment results. Think of supplier of the year awards. Think of your own action plans, tracking KPIs, and those kind of things. Develop the right dashboards. Develop document retention systems. Because there's a lot of things coming at you, and you probably very early on want to be able to make sure that you have that data there in the right place, the right spot, because it's really going to be helpful data, and you don't want to miss out on that being misfiled or forgotten about it or whatever else. Richness of the data is very strong and powerful in that sense. To me, the lessons learned.
Thank you. We've talked about the corporate side of this. We've talked about the way this sustainability has been embedded in the organization and indeed the results you've been seeing. But for you personally, what would you say has been the most rewarding part of this experience for you, Richard?
Yeah, it's slightly holistic, I think, because at the end of the day, let's remind ourselves that we can talk about EcoVadis score and all of these things, but at the end of the day, we are trying to create a better society, yeah, because it's environmental, social, and governance. So you're trying to avoid things like bribing. You're trying to create a workplace that is socially acceptable, where you've got everything, inclusiveness, and those kind of things. So you're talking about a better society as well as environmental performance improvement, be it on the use of water, waste production, or greenhouse gas emissions. That is really what we're, at the end of the day, all about. Now, in my team, I do see increasingly that the DNA is changing. So within their daily jobs, this is becoming a regular topic for discussion. And that's very encouraging to see. We as Venator, we have our plans. We're making progress. And that progress is, of course, not only on the journey with EcoVadis becoming a mature company in this area, because that's what your DNA development is all about. That's really where I think EcoVadis' strength comes from. But we've now got the plans in place and translated them into how your environmental performance is going to improve. As an example, I'm personally engaged in the purchasing of a CO2-free hydrogen fuel that will replace natural gas. The end result of this negotiation will be that by 2029, we will have a supply agreement in place that starts to supply us with CO2-free hydrogen instead of natural gas. What is the net result? A 25% reduction in that site's carbon footprint. That's real stuff. Now you start talking about the results. And the result comes from that whole journey. And that's really what I would like to see more of it. So if you then start saying, you know, your sustainable procurement journey is where you take the vendors by the hand and you hope to start seeing that those vendors eventually are starting to also present their carbon reduction improvements for the utilities and the chemicals that we are selling or that we are buying and they are selling to us. I think that's kind of really where it starts to reflect like, yeah, the journey has been worth it. We've created that DNA within our organization and within our vendors. And, you know, the results are starting to come in. That's what it's all about.
Excellent. Now, earlier you highlighted some of the general lessons. Now, what advice would you give to other companies who are beginning this journey or the early stages of their sustainable procurement journey?
I would say DIY. Do it yourself early on, I think, is particularly important. So do not outsource your efforts to consultants. You got to shape your own DNA on this one, and one that then creates and fits within your culture, your values. And I would argue that for any company, choose your own path that fits you, your industry, and your culture and your values. I would argue to me that is the best path on this to go about. And yes, you will use consultancy, of course, for maybe the right kind of questions and moments in time, etc. Because I'll be honest with you, when we had to develop our own carbon footprint plan, but again, it came from our own DNA and evolution to say, hey, we need to develop a carbon footprint reduction plan for our sites. Well, then you start going into the deep assessment of saying, well, how do you go about that? Because that's something we haven't done before and we don't necessarily have the knowledge. Well, on that particular task, you then brought in, and we did bring in the right type of consultancy and said, you know, help. This is the ask. This is what we need to know. You do have that expertise. Talk us through it. Do it, make the study, and present the results to us. And that was, again, part of our development as well at the same time. So now we know how it gets done and how it works and how you go about it and what you need to think of and work through and those kind of things. So it was definitely helpful to us in our education. And it fitted within the right moment of, at that moment in time, it was such a deep expertise knowledge you were looking for. Then, of course, always bring in the consultancy. Let's be totally clear. But the bigger journey itself, don't outsource that one. You do it yourself. Trip, slip, fall over, stand up again. It's really how you get your proper DNA developed.
Great advice. Thank you, Richard. What's your vision now for the future in sustainable procurement at Venator?
Yeah, that's really, I think, the deeper vendor relationship development with those top 200 vendors that really make up the key of your business. You're clearly going to go to a level of differential openness than you've probably ever had before. And the key challenge in all of this will be who are going to come with you on this journey and who will stay behind. So I do believe that we still will have some tough choices to make. And specifically as we're, of course, very much looking at this, our long-term goal on specifically our Scope 3 carbon footprint reduction. We've got those 80 vendors that got to make it happen with us. That's going to be interesting and challenging to see. So I can foresee tough choices might still be coming up at that moment in time. I would argue that, like I said, you know, data management, because I talked about top 200 vendors. I talked about the 80 top vendors for our carbon footprint. But there's 4,000 other vendors out there globally where we increasingly need to develop a certain amount of acceptable data and intelligence. So with that, proper data management is a challenge. You got to work your way through that. You don't want to know everything about all of those 4,000, but you got to get there with a relative certainty that a number of those that are second level critical, maybe third level critical, you do know what they're doing and you do want to know more about them than you ever did before. That, I think, is that part of the angle. If I then take a slightly different approach to it, you've got, sustainable procurement, which is not yet a, what I would call, global level playing field. And I think through the podcast so far as we talked, you know, it isn't a free thing that you're doing. You know, it's, you're putting efforts into it. You're putting your time into it. You go through subscriptions like the ones we have with EcoVadis. This isn't a journey for free. And as long as sustainable procurement is not yet a global level playing field, it is a bit challenging, of course, because, yeah, Europe in many ways is leading globally. But, yeah, it's still, you know, how do you compete globally and keep it financially affordable in Europe? Question mark. I don't necessarily have the answer at this stage, but I do see some challenges out there that we need to manage in that sense. And of course, it probably means global legislation needs to pick up more and more in that sense to make sure that that level playing field starts to get created as well. Now, at the end of the day, visionary-wise, results count. That is the real focus. Great to have a super EcoVadis scoreboard. Results count to deliver a better world.
Well, that's a great vision, Richard. I wish you the very best of success with your ongoing work, your ongoing sustainable procurement at Venator. And thank you so much for your time today and such a rich, interesting interview.
Thank you, Fergal. It definitely was enjoyable. I can tell you, it's journeys like this that does give really energy as well. You know, it's a great opportunity for growth and development of a procurement team, procurement specialist. It's a wonderful journey to be on.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Sustainable Value Chains podcast with EcoVadis. We hope you found it interesting, and we'd love if you could share it with your colleagues and leave a review. If you'd like to find out more about EcoVadis, please visit ecovadis.com.